The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we have a lot of new and insightful thoughts for you. We're going to talk about the latest on controlling your blood sugar. We're looking at probably 90 million Americans have problems with their blood sugar on a regular basis. They're not all diagnosed with diabetes, but they're pre-diabetic, which means they have a greater risk of depression, heart attack, stroke, cancers, and dying early, a minimum of 8 years early. Well, we're going to show you what you can do about that. Then my guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Robert Silverstein. He is board-certified cardiologist, board-certified internist, and we're going to talk about how we can improve our immune system to prevent flus, cold, and treat disease naturally. He's also a professor at the University of Connecticut School of Medicine. Commentary, What Corruption and Force Have Wrought in Egypt by Chris Hedges from Truthdig. And then, time permitting, I want to get into our environmental section today to answer all those who believe that global warming is not real. And if it is, well, so what's the big deal? How many times have we heard the pundits say, look at the worst temperatures on record as far as snowfall and cold, and they're talking about global warming? I'll be addressing why we have the worst snow falls and the coldest temperature because of global warming. Also, this is a special call out to the people who believe that Ayn Rand and her philosophy, which was called a moral philosophy, where she believed that the wealthy are wealthy because they're smarter, they work harder. But then she demonizes anyone who is not getting ahead or anyone who needs help as the undeserving poor. She considers most of the middle class, or did, as just parasites, looters, moochers. I've heard her recommended on such shows as Michael Savage, and among others, and also Glenn Beck. Today, a little reality about who she was and why she was the ultimate hypocrite. Just a little recognition of this. And also, why you can now kiss goodbye to organic beef, dairy, and many vegetables. Now, for those who eat organic beef or dairy, better be aware, you're not going to be able to eat it long. I'll give you the latest on that as well. I don't think I'll have time in this program today, but possibly this afternoon. I've wanted to get to this and what happens to downtime, the extinction of deep thinking in sacred space. And just to give you a little upcoming preview, this afternoon at our 3 o'clock show, which for those of you who are listening, it's on our sister station, WPFW in Washington. You can hear it over the internet by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. I'm going to put into proper historical perspective everything that we've been told about the Mayan prophecies of 2012. But this was someone who knows what they're talking about, Professor Robert Sittler. He is a Mayan expert, a Mayan linguist, and he spent the last 30 years living at the Mayans in Highland Guatemala. And he'll talk about the reality. Then we're going to be talking tomorrow with the beginning of a special panel that will extend into upcoming weeks on what we really know about vaccines, their safety and efficacy. Finally, the International Vaccine Council has been able to pull together scientists and physicians from 14 countries to look at the real risks of vaccines, something that's not being discussed at all in the mainstream media. And then tomorrow afternoon on our 3 o'clock show, the entire hour will be set aside to give a a real perspective, a progressive perspective on what is happening in Egypt and the uprising in Africa and the Middle East. I'll go country by country, and I'll give you my predictions. And by the way, if you remember, just 2 years ago, we predicted this would be happening. But it's accelerating. I'll have Sarah Etlantawi, the Communications Director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, and also a PhD in Islamic Studies from Harvard University, and also Professor Shamir Shihata, Professor of Arab Politics at the Center for Contemporary Arab Studies at Edmund Walsh School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. Plus, I'll give you the latest on WikiLeaks that shows that the United States government was participating in this. Oh, yeah, our fingerprints are all over this. What does this really mean? And here's the final part, Gerald Celante. Is it possible over the next 2 to 3 years with a class warfare, and that's really what it is, class warfare that is happening around the world, will this happen in America? Is it possible to happen here? That is tomorrow at 3. Then Wednesday, spiritual bypassing, an exploration into the growing problem in popular Western spirituality, when, and I see this all the time, when people immerse themselves in spiritual language, some spiritual disciplines, some spiritual rituals, they read all the right books, they listen to the right tapes and videos, but what they're doing is they're sidestepping, dealing with unwanted feelings and unresolved wounds, and as a result, nothing is changing. Dr. Robert Masters will be my guest on that. And then Dr. Peter Levine, regarded by many as the world's leading authority on the psychology of brain and brain science. And we're going to talk about a whole concept in what happens in trauma, that it releases insights in part of the brain that has strong spiritual implications. So, a lot of interesting topics on things that are relevant that are not being covered by the mainstream media. Let's begin. I want to share some thoughts from Alonzo Brody and my own input, because I work with a lot of people who have sugar imbalances. And you see it when they start talking about how fatigued they are. At times of the day when they really shouldn't be, like mid-morning, from about 4 a.m. when you awaken, if you do it 4 or 5, until about 11 a.m., that's when you're in a highly anabolic or building up state. That's when your energy should be continuously growing up. Then from about 11 till 4, you're in a plane where you're fairly equal, assuming that you have a lunch and that you replenish your blood sugar. And then starting about 4 p.m. until about 11 p.m., your body starts going through a slowing down, what we call catabolic landing, where you come into where about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, your body is fully catabolic and you're ready to go through sleep so the body can detoxify, rejuvenate, and get ready for the next cycle. So there's this ebb and flow, unless, of course, you interrupt it. If you take calls at night, if you're on the cell phone, if you're on the computer, all of these emit electromagnetic pulses into the brain. That will adversely affect the pineal gland and the secretion of melatonin. It also creates a hyper-hot chromosome, which means that you literally, and I've seen so many of these, you can look at a pattern of the brain imaging, when a person uses a cell phone for just 2 minutes, and it's already overheated the brain. Or you're close to a computer, it does the same thing. So, all that disrupts our capacity for good night's sleep, and hence our immune system, and hence our blood sugar levels are thrown off, because these are all interconnected. Our thyroid gland is adversely affected. Our adrenal glands are adversely affected. So now we know that in order to control blood sugar, we have to control our diet, our behavior, and our hormones. Probably, I'm going to guess, 40% of all Americans suffer from a chromium deficiency. Now, why is chromium important? Because chromium is the micronutrient that helps control the high blood sugar and pre-diabetic complications. And this is likely the result of our commercial farming that depletes the soil valuable chromium in industrial food processing that depletes natural chromium from whole foods. Now, compounding all this is the reality that your bloodstream frequently does not get the chromium from the blood into the cells because of the lack of proper absorption, and it gets worse the older you get. In fact, just for everyone in the audience, the older you get, and older mean after age 35, you have more and more difficulty getting the nutrients out of the food through digestion into the intestine, into the body, the bloodstream, and then through the liver, then conjugated, and then into the cells where they can be used. And that's why more attention should be paid to eating slowly, not having real cold or hot beverages with your meal. Ideally, have your beverages before your meal so that the body's natural digestion isn't diluted. Because if you have food in your stomach and then you start drinking, the beverage is going to dilute the hydrochloric acid. So that means that partially digested piece of food will go in the intestine. There's a little flap at the top of your stomach. It's called the cardiac sphincter. And then there's a little flap at the bottom of the stomach, which looks like a pear. And that flap opens, and that's pyloric sphincter. And that allows food to go from the stomach into the intestine. In the top 12 inches, the intestine deacidifies it. And then the rest of the intestine is alkaline. But if you start taking in highly acidic beverages, like coffee, colas, alcohol, then that does not deacidify, and that starts burning the little villi. Those are the hair-like follicles that pick up the nutrients and take them into the bloodstream. So it burns them, and then you start getting little lesions, and hence you can end up with all forms of ulcerated intestinal problems and gastric ulcers and E. pylori, all kinds of problems. So not consuming a beverage directly with the meal unless the beverage is the meal, like a soup or a juice or a smoothie. But I'm talking about cold beverages, carbonated beverages, and very hot beverages. All dilute that. In fact, what you really want, you want a lot of enzymes. Proteolytic enzymes are very important to break down proteins. Carbohydrate enzymes are important to break down carbohydrates. Fat enzymes like lipase, important for breaking down the fat. So if you just took yourself some digestive capsules, that will help. That way you're getting more nutrients. So anyhow, all this is important for optimizing our blood sugar and getting it stable. And chromium is just the master blood sugar regulator. I don't know of any other nutrient that does as much to regulate your blood sugar as chromium. And chromium, like most metals in our body, binds to a specific protein carrier molecule. Just as the hemoglobin molecule in red blood cells binds to iron, the chromium, what is called chromiodulin molecule, binds to chromium ions. Now, in the presence of insulin, the chromiodulin molecule changes shape and location in the cell, triggering activation of a vital glucose transporter mechanism called GLUT4. And it's found most abundantly in skeletal muscle and fat tissue, where most glucose metabolism takes place in the body. But once activated by chromium, GLUT4 shifts its location from deep within the cell's internal matrix to a position on the cell's membrane. And GLUT4 then allows glucose to flow from high concentrations in the blood to lower concentrations in the cell, allowing the cell to safely metabolize sugar while lowering blood sugar levels in the bloodstream at the same time. And one of the earliest events in the onset of type 2 diabetes is now known to be inhibition of glucose transport by the GLUT4 complex. So chromium helps get less blood sugar into the cell so you don't end up with real bad diabetic complications. And chromium has consistently demonstrated improvement in blood sugar levels and insulin sensitivity and lipid profiles. So you want to make sure that you get your chromium. I'm going to suggest 200 micrograms three times a day. But also, there's other things as well. There's an herb. It's called amla. and it's also known as Indian gooseberry. Now, some of you who use an advanced vitamin C product get amla. I consider just a superstar. It directly impacts a host of biochemical and gene-regulating processes that positively influence factors related to high blood sugar metabolic syndrome. And traditional preparations containing amla have long been known in India to lower blood sugar in diabetics. But we didn't really know how it worked. Well, now we know that amla extracts are powerful antioxidants. They inhibit digestive enzymes that would otherwise convert starch to sugar, helping to reduce blood sugar loads following a meal. Now, in preclinical models, an herbal combination containing amla reduced lipid peroxidation. And you've heard me mention thousands of times that lipid peroxidation is a major cause of disease. The free radical damage to cell membranes plays a crucial role in atherosclerosis and insulin resistance and diabetes and cancer and arthritis. Well, amla, A-M-L-A, amla, shields tissue from damage inflicted by glucose that's high at multiple levels, and it prevents production of sugar alcohols that wreak havoc on the vulnerable ocular eye structures. And therefore, it's going to help you, if you're diabetic, not go blind. And if you're not a diabetic, to keep your eyes healthier. So amla extracts are shown additional promise by preventing metabolic syndrome. And there's also a compound mixture of organic and inorganic compounds in fulvic acid, F-U-L-V-I-C. And it's provided by what we call Shilajit, S-H-I-L-A-J-I-T. And studies have shown that this Shilajit has remarkable effects on the ways in which our mitochondria utilize energy from sugar. And fulvic acid acts as the molecular chaperone, shuttling electrons efficiently along the pathway within the mitochondria. Now, all this sounds a little technical, but for those of you who are taking your advanced vitamin C, you're getting that. And you didn't know what that amla was. Now you do. And by taking the chromium each day, good for you also. And then also, there's a couple more things that can help you. And one of them is seaweed extracts. That's right, seaweed extracts. That will help lower your blood sugar level and give you some protection. And this is accomplished safely and effectively by introducing the natural enzyme inhibitors that halt carbohydrate metabolism in the gut. And the most attractive targets are the sugar-producing alpha amylase and alpha glucosidase enzymes. Extracts of various seaweeds have inhibitory effects on these enzymes. So when you're taking your green powders and you're getting all those seaweed extracts, you're helping protect yourself. And finally, a superstar, cinnamon. Cinnamon traditionally has been used to help people who are obese and with metabolic syndrome and diabetes. And why? Because the polyphenols in water-soluble cinnamon extract act on multiple targets to enhance insulin sensitivity and lower blood sugar and limit damage by advanced glycation end products. You've heard me mention many times about glycation. A hamburger and a bun, that's real bad glycation. A pizza, real bad glycation. Potato chips, bad. Bagels, bad. Toast, terribly bad. And hot dog on a bun, that's your glycation. That's when something of protein nature and a carbohydrate are used together at high temperatures. Well, you got to cook these things in order to eat them, and that's where you get this glycation. Well, collectively, these advanced glycation end products contribute to reduction the metabolic syndrome. Well, cinnamon, along comes a superstar cinnamon. The polyphenols inside are powerful antioxidants. Powerful. I mean, right at the top of the list in ORAC. And they exert direct protective effect on your cells and tissues. And in recent years, we've learned that cinnamon also increases the number and activity of glucose transport complexes that enable cells to take up glucose in the presence of insulin. And insulin also upregulates production of the metabolic sensors known as PPAR, which are being investigated by a lot of people because of their anti-diabetic potential. So cinnamon capsules, yes. Cinnamon as a powder, yeah, they both work. And they do a lot of good. I'm Gary Knoll, and that's the latest on health and healing, and always, as much as possible, ahead of the curve from quality peer-reviewed literature. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you from all over the world and the 1,000 new people to our Facebook. And we'll talk with Steve for a moment. I'm on location filming, and Steve is Lopez is our media director and social media director, and he's in our studio in New York City. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
Good. We have had a phenomenal outpouring of support for the series 4-hour special we did on Andrew Wakefield, in defense of Andrew Wakefield. And the only reason I did this is, what people don't realize is, I didn't just jump in and decide to do something positive about Andrew Wakefield. I took months of doing in-depth research, and when I found that the preponderance of evidence showed that Andrew Wakefield had been scapegoated, as had the other 12 scientists working on their studies in 1996, and therefore Brian Deer, I felt, was grossly inaccurate. And I felt what the Times London and British Medical Journal did was wrong. Then I set about deconstructing the arguments against him. Well, we've had thousands upon thousands of people respond, and they're now spreading this. It's gone viral. So let us remember that the issue is really not Andrew Wakefield. The issue is democracy in medicine, where people who have dissenting points of view are allowed a forum without being attacked and mocked and ridiculed or degraded and destroyed because they took away his medical license, now calling him a fraud. We could find no fraud. To the contrary, the actual documents that were used against him for doing experiments on children without any permission, I'm the only journalist in the world, outside of Brian Deer, who has those, read them on the air in detail and complete to show he did have permission. They all had permission. And therefore, the British Medical Council should have known that, but they chose not to introduce any of those. As a result, they charged them based upon evidence that was clear and present. They disregarded it. So that was a kangaroo court. And then we started looking into their motives. And that's where we're at to this day. But they've also done this in the United States, and they've done this with other physicians as well. So this is an ongoing pattern. Really, the bottom of it is, protect the vaccine industry. Protect the manufacturers of vaccines. And the vaccine industry, with its front groups, its foundations, have been able to give lavishly to anyone willing to praise its supposed healthcare miracle progress. And we are now taking a look at the safety and efficacy of vaccines, aside from autism and aside from this Wakefield business, just in general. That will be on tomorrow. Now, a lot of people are coming to Facebook. Let me just reiterate from my position. I certainly can appreciate if people feel that they need to express what's happening in their daily lives. And whether your cat got a hairball on its throat, or whether you woke up with an ingrown toenail and you want to share that with the world, that's your business, and there are sites to do that. Please don't do that online. My site I created for one reason only, and one reason only, please, to share relevant information on socially significant causes and issues, whether it's genetic engineering or human rights issues, whether it's corruption in some area or the suppression of a particular therapy that works, to be able to have a site where people can bring films and stories and opinions on these issues. Because at the end of the day, almost everything that we share on our site that historically has been shown to be 100% accurate, you will not find any mainstream media, nor will you even find it in the left media. The left is pro-vaccine, does not accept any of the vaccines cause autism or danger. They're pro all the medications. You never see them doing specials against the overdrugging of our children. And I monitor the media carefully, left and right. So that's why we do the shows we do, and that's why we're the number one listened to program in the world for progressive and independent-minded thinkers. That said, what's the latest, Steve?
Well, to reiterate a bit of what you just mentioned, in our continued effort to shape and develop our Facebook community into an effective venue for the absolute highest level discourse and social interaction on contemporary issues, we wanted to thank all of our subscribers and friends for participating in this discourse by uploading and posting pertinent videos, articles, and really helping us comb the internet for the absolute best information on the web. Our community is growing extremely rapidly. I think we've had well over 200 requests for friendship this past weekend alone, and we have some exciting plans in the works to create the absolute best user experience in receiving and sharing progressive ideas and breaking news. And as you said, Gary, we also want to remind our friends and subscribers to please keep the personal updates and marketing messages on Gary's site to a minimum, if at all. The focus here, again, is really to report and share on these news items and media elements that are socially relevant. And, of course, we also welcome questions, thought-provoking, pertinent discussion points on our page. And, again, we just want to thank all of our current users who are contributing and making our page as lively as it is. And welcome any additional users. If you sign on to Facebook.com and do a search for Gary Null, he's the first result. We welcome any and all friendships.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate
sure.
it.
Of course.
So, again, please don't use my site as talking about everything else in your life. But if you have something you're concerned about on all the different important social issues, this is how we address these issues, and this is how we gain an understanding from one another. And we like to provide the original in-depth investigative reporting, because that's not being done by people. It's one thing to report upon something. It's something else to investigate it. And we pride ourselves on more than 600 original investigative reports, meaning more than any other radio program or author in the world. So that's why we're there. So please share in that context. Now, I'm going to go, before we go to our guest in about 10 minutes, I'm going to go rapidly through a lot of important issues that I believe we have to know about. Some are my own, some are combinations, some are by others. For example, from Ari Laveau from Alternet, and this is mine as well as him, he says, quote, Monsanto has been trying for years to gain approval for its genetically engineered Roundup Ready alfalfa seed. And just last week, it finally got the green light in the form of complete deregulation. This means that farmers are free to plant genetically engineered alfalfa, and the USDA won't even be keeping track of who plants it or where. There will be no tracking, no notification system, and no responsibility on the part of Monsanto for any business that is lost as a result of genetic contamination that is certain to result. If the ruling stands, you can simply kiss goodbye organic dairy and beef and many other organic vegetables that will be grown because of the contamination. Now, here are my thoughts on this. As a certified organic farmer, it means this. Let's say on one side of the road you're growing organic grains and vegetables. On the other side, they're growing this genetically engineered alfalfa. It is inevitable that birds and wind and rain will take, and insects will take, the genetically engineered alfalfa and bring it over and contaminate it. Now, two things can happen. Then Monsanto can come in and will sue you, and they've done this, because they're going to say, oh, you didn't get the rights and sign the contracts to plant our crop. And you can say, but I didn't. This is from pollination. They've actually won on this, and they're a terrible organization. We've showed you the criminal activity that they've paid fines for, 700 fines, one of the largest fines in American history at that point, for what they've done. And they're the creators of such things as Agent Orange. I mean, they have a whole really sordid history. Yet they control the White House. They got their man, specifically and personally appointed by President Obama, to head all of the safety of food in the United States. And now the head of the USDA. So they've stacked every single part of this with their people, all with the full knowledge of who these people were before they were appointed. That means then that you're going to have contamination on your organic crops, which means you cannot no longer can certify them as organic, which means we no longer have a certification. Then in will come Monsanto and DuPont and other purveyors of this, you know, genetically engineered food, and say, okay, let's include genetic engineering, and let's include food irradiation, and let's include sludge as part of our organic standards. They will do that. Then the big sellers of organic, such as Walmart, will then say, well, we sell organic. The unknowing and unsuspecting public will think that this is from a quality farm standard. It will not be. So it's only a matter now of maybe 1 or 2 years before organic completely changes. This message is for all of you who continue to listen to those who believe, either on the right or left, mainly on the right, that global warming doesn't exist. This is from Stephen Leahy, and this is from Interpress Service. Quote, Exbridge, Canada, the world's northern freezer, is on a rapid defrost as large volumes of warm water are pouring into the Arctic Ocean, speeding the melt of sea ice. Surface temperatures in parts of the Arctic have been 21 degrees above normal for more than a month in recent weeks. By the way, that's unheard of in history. Quote, boats are still in the water during the first week of January. Unheard of. That's according to Dr. David Phillips, senior climatologist with Environmental Canada. And what is happening is because of all this warming in the Arctic and the melting of the ice is causing warmer water to get out of the area, which is a large area, by the way. It's as large as Russia, which is the largest area, certainly a country in the world, as a single country. And we're dealing with millions of square miles. And that's what's causing temperature change, which causes precipitate matter, which causes excessive snow and cold. So our cold of cold, snowy of snowy, is due to global warming, and that's the science on it. Now, to those who believe, and I am not one of those people, that Ayn Rand, who, by the way, I actually spoke to, was a person who so despised the middle class that she would go on to write that that any form of altruism was basic evil. And she wrote a book, and my goodness, what a book this is. It's called The Virtues of Selfishness. And she was like the guy in Wall Street who says greed is good, but she really believed it. And she believed that any form of government control was delivering oneself to gradual enslavement. And so she's used by many people in the conservative movement, a lot of people in the Tea Party movement, as their savior, because they now come up with this concept that you're either a creator or you're a user. And so if you're a user, you're just worthless. She was not alone. There was Rose Wilder Lane and Isabel Pat Patterson. Both rejected Social Security benefits. But guess who, at the end of her life, did a whole about-face when she had lung cancer? I think it was 1974, when she would have been about 69. She was a two-pack-a-day smoker. And by the way, she also rejected that smoking caused cancer. Well, she had lung cancer surgery, and then, guess what? She became a socialist. Oh, yeah. She got Medicare, and she got Social Security. So, remember that the next time Sean Hannity or Glenn Beck is promoting this idea that we shouldn't be concerned about those loafers, those slackers, those moochers. No, Sean and the rest of you, it's called just being compassionate and caring and spiritually connected to the other people in this world who are not in the same place you are. But your savior, Ayn Rand, was a hypocrite. And finally, just a preview. I believe that much of the information that we are getting about what's happening in Egypt is misinformation, disinformation, and simply foolishness. Tomorrow I will do a full hour at our 3 o'clock show to explore the real ramifications. But the uprising in Egypt, although united around the nearly universal desire to rid the country of the military dictator Hosni Mubarak, also presages the inevitable shift within the Arab world away from the secular regimes toward an embrace of Islamic rule. Now, don't be fooled by the glib sloganeering about democracy or the facile reporting by Western reporters, few of whom, by the way, speak Arabic or have experience in the region. Egyptians are not reporting by Western reporters the truth. They have their own culture in Egypt. They have their own set of grievances and their own history. And it's not our history. they want, as we do, to have a say in their own governance. They haven't. It's a facade. But they say will include widespread support, especially among Egypt's poor. And 70% of the people in Egypt live on $4 or less per day, and almost 20% of them live on $2 or less per day. That's the same as what many people in other parts of Africa live on. And they make up over half the country and live on a just tiny fraction. And guess what? They're supporting the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic parties. Now, any real opening of the political system in the Arab world's most populated nation of 80 million will see an empowering of these Islamic movements. And any attempt to close the system further, say a replacement of Mubarak with a military dictator or someone within the military, will only ensure a deeper radicalization of Egypt and a wider Arab world. And the only way opposition to the United States-backed regime of Mubarak could be expressed for the past three decades was through Islamic movements in the underground, from the Muslim Brotherhood to more radical Islamic groups, some of which embrace violence. Most of them do. And any replacement of Mubarak, which is inevitable, I believe he will be gone within this week. And while it may initially be dominated by moderate or secular leaders, once elections are held and popular will is expressed, I believe, and I am predicting now on the record, that you will see a lot of Islamic coloring. A new government to maintain credibility with the Egyptian population will have to move more against Washington and be more openly antagonistic to Israel. And what is happening in Egypt, like what happened in Tunisia, tightens the noose that will, unless Israel and Washington radically change their policies, which they will not, towards the Palestinians, which they can't, and the Muslim world in general, then it will end up strangling the Jewish state as well as dramatically curtailing American influence in the Middle East, both of which become inevitable as long as you continue to have the wrong-minded leadership that you do. So what they fear, they actually create. The failure of the United States to halt the slow-motion ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians by Israel has consequences. The failure to acknowledge the collective humiliation and anger felt by most Arabs because of the presence of U.S. troops on Muslim soil, not only in Iraq and Afghanistan, but in the staging bases set up in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, that has consequences. The failure to denounce repression, including the widespread use of torture and censorship and rigged elections wielded by our allies against their citizens in the Middle East, has consequences. We are soaked in the stench of these regimes. Mubarak, who reportedly is suffering from cancer, is seen as our puppet, a man who betrayed his own people and the Palestinians for money and power. The Muslim world does not see us as we see ourselves. Muslims are aware, while we are not, that we have murdered tens of thousands of Muslims in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. We have terrorized families, villages, and nations. We enable and defend the Israeli state against the Palestinians and Lebanese. Indeed, we give the Israelis the weapons and military aid to carry out that effort. We dismiss the thousands of dead as collateral damage. And when those who are fighting against occupation forces kill us or Israelis, we condemn them, regardless of context, always terrorist. Our hypocrisy is recognized on the Arab street. But are we ever on the Arab street? Never. Are we ever outside of the gated communities? Rarely. And hence, the voices we hear are the voices who profit from our support of the tyrannical states over there. What a difference when you talk with the average person. Most Arabs see bloody and disturbing images every day from the wars of Iraq and Afghanistan. Gee whiz, why don't we see them? Because we are censored. You don't ever have a chance to see the truth of what we do in other countries. It's all sanitized. They, on the other hand, have grown sick of us. They have grown sick of the Arab regimes that pay lip service to suffering of the Palestinians, do nothing to intervene. They have grown sick of being ruled by tyrants who are funded and supported by Washington, including the very ones who seem surprise, surprise. My God, you mean the public are angry? Yeah, the public that you should have known were angry because all the money that you gave went for weapons and for their private fortunes, the rich and ruling, and you privatized their nation and made 90% of the people poor. Are you now surprised that there's a consequence to that? Gee whiz. Arabs understand that we, like the Israelis, primarily speak to the Muslim world in the crude language of power and violence, not in peace and love and giving. And because of our entrenchment with our own power and ability to project force, we are woefully out of touch. Israel and American intelligence service did not foresee the popular uprising in Tunisia or Egypt. General Avi Kochavi, Israel's new intelligence chief, told Knesset members last Tuesday, quote, "There is no concern at the moment about the stability of the Egyptian government," unquote. Well, Tuesday, it turns out, was the day hundreds of thousands of Egyptians poured into the streets to begin their nationwide protest. Why we didn't see that, why they didn't see it. So what is happening in Egypt will damage and perhaps unravel the fragile peace treaty between Egypt and Jordan with Israel. It is likely to end Washington's alliance with these Arab intelligence services, including the use of prisons to torture those we have disappeared. Isn't it amazing to hear Barack Obama say, "We don't torture"? Oh, yes, we do. But no longer in America. We torture in Egypt and in Jordan and in about 60 other black op sites around the world. Why don't you just be honest about it? Can't be honest because it's a war crime. Well, what's it matter? Whoever punished anyone for war crimes in this or the last administration? The economic ties between these countries will suffer. The current antagonism between Cairo and Hamas government in Gaza will be replaced by more overt cooperation. The Egyptian government's collaboration with Israel, which includes demolishing tunnels in Gaza, the sharing of intelligence, the passage of Israeli warships and submarines through the Suez Canal, will be in serious jeopardy. Any government, even a transition government that is headed by a pro-Western secularist such as Mohammed El-Baradei, and by the way, before you think that he is the new great leader, I will give you a detailed background on what foundation he is associated with, which are all globalists, all of them, every member, including George Soros and all the rest, Bill and Melinda Gates, are believing in the globalization method, and he is their spokesperson. Do you think he's going to make changes? No. But he will be looked upon as the person to cement the relationship between Israel and Washington. Well, we are seeing the rise of a new Middle East, one that will not be as pliable to Washington or as cowed by Israel. The secular Arab regimes backed by the United States are discredited and moribund. The lofty promise of a pan-Arab union championed by the Egyptian leader Gamal Abdel Nasser and the original Ba'athist has become a farce. Nasser's defiance of Washington, the Western powers, has been replaced by client states. The secular Arab regimes, from Morocco to Yemen, for all their ties with the West, have now provided no freedom, no dignity, no opportunity, no prosperity for their own people. Payback is a bitch. And it's coming. They have failed as spectacularly as the secular Palestinian resistance movement led by the utterly corrupt Yasser Arafat. And the Arabs, frustrated in enduring mountain poverties, are ready for something new. Radical Islamic groups, unfortunately, such as the Palestinian Hamas and the Shiite Hezbollah in Lebanon and the jihadists fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, unfortunately, by the young and the poor, are looked upon as heroes. We look upon them differently. But when you're young and you're poor and in the Arab world, whoever is seen as the enemy of your enemy becomes your friend. My God, could you imagine what a different world it would have been had they put money in the infrastructure and jobs and a higher standard of living for all those poor Arab young men and women? Then there would be a different alliance today. And in conclusion, the decision to withdraw the police from Egyptian cities and turn security over to the army means that Mubarak and his handlers in Washington face a grim choice. Either the army, as in Tunisia, refuses to intervene with the protests, meaning you've got an immediate fly out of Egypt by Mubarak, or it tries to quell the protests with force, and then you've got hundreds dead, thousands dead and wounded, and that means that he is over in another month or two. The fraternalization between the soldiers and the crowds, along with the presence of tanks adorned with graffiti, such as Mubarak, will fall, does not bode well for Washington. Chris Hedges and myself. Let's go now to my guest, who is standing by to talk about the issues on a different topic and one that is important. Dr. Robert Silverstein, as I mentioned earlier, is a board-certified cardiologist and internist, and he's here to talk about the priority we need to give to our dietary choices to improve our immune system and prevent disease. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Could you please take us through the idea of what we could do to enhance our well-being in order to build up an immunity to fight diseases that otherwise, if we continue with some of our foolish ways, are inevitable. We just don't know when or how or what they will be, but it's likely that it will happen. And take us just step by step through this, if you would. The floor is yours.
Sure. Most diseases that we're familiar with, diabetes, the cancers, the high blood pressure, the high cholesterol, are not natural to the human body. As a matter of fact, we provoke them. There is no genetic predisposition that forces these to occur unless we do certain things. So if we did not do those things, then like the pre-technological societies where people live as long as we do, that is those populations that do live as long as we do, never get high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, cancer. And you are right that ultimately it appears to work through the immune system. When you take a look at some of the fancy names, interleukin-6 and nuclear factor, kappa beta, these kinds of things are turned on by reactive oxygen species, the opposite of antioxidants. They are oxidants. And these things are turned on and multiplied by the things we do. What we breathe, like if we smoke or live in smog. What we drink, like if we drink other than water and weak herb tea. And again, I'm not against anything. If you wanted to have a cigar with the birth of your child, feel free to not only feel free, of course you can do it, but that's not going to make any difference. It's when we do the daily tobacco and the daily smog, when we drink the coffee, which unfortunately, as a former significant coffee drinker, I call dirty water, which is what it looks like, very tasty, but dirty water. And then the question of alcohol comes up, and I say, sure, limit it to 3 or 4 drinks a week. Like, I'm not saying never have coffee. Then comes our diet. What does the human biology call for? What do our teeth call for, the enzymes in our saliva glands, length of our small bowel? All the things point to the fact that we are at least 90%, you can say it, herbivore, vegan, vegetarian, I don't care how you say it, we are supposed to exist predominantly on plant food at about the 90% level with anything once in a while. I am not against pork chops, fried in butter, Kentucky fried chicken, ice cream, pizza, but it's a question of how many times a year you can do those things, not a day, a week, or a month. And then, of course, exercise and the easy. This whole thing about BMI has it wrong. Not that it isn't helpful. Proper exercise should lead us to the point that when we lift up our shirts and look down at our abdomen, we can see where the muscles meet the muscles on the abdomen. That's called clear lines of definition and demarcation, which I use the acronym, which I hope somebody will steal my idea and make a T-shirt out of, called I am a clod, CLOD/D, clear lines of definition and demarcation. And then, of course, philosophically. The most important thing I can say about that psychologically is stay in reality. Things are what they are. Deal with them as best you can with humility and not anger. Perseverance is everything. And those are the 5 things that if you do them right, they're the 5 basic activities that guarantee health. And if you do them wrong, they're the 5 basic errors that result in the development of diseases. Nothing I've said is 100%, but it is adequately true that I could say 90% plus of the healthcare budget in the United States and healthcare costs individually could be eliminated if people paid attention to what I just said.
Okay. I share a little different view. I believe, and though I understand exactly what you're saying, and we have 2 types of realities. I believe we must distinguish that. I look at people who make choices on a curve. Some people are capable of just simply doing the right thing almost consistently. They're going to exercise. They're going to keep to a healthy diet. They're going to de-stress. They're going to be engaged in social important issues, which I believe is one of the most important nutrients we can put into our psyche each day. What can I do for others, not just what I can do for myself, to show we care about the world we live in? I can't say that I would not have a pork chop myself, because though it would be okay if a person did it and said, will I have harm from this? Yeah, no, you're not going to have harm from that. But the animal is dead, and it didn't have to. So I connect myself with the grace of the animal. There's a new show on television called Grow It, Kill It, Eat It. And it's just a horrifying look at what happens when you get up close to that hamburger before it was a hamburger, or a pork chop before it was a pork chop. Would you address that, please? Do we have, in your opinion, and I'm not here to argue with you, I'm just interested in your opinion, do you believe that we have a moral responsibility to that which we eat?
In no sense of criticism do I say you're ahead of the curve. I took a very practical point of view. One of the things I say in one of my favorite handouts, which can go to our website, www.thepmc, the PMC, the Preventive Medicine Center, .org, is called Numbers. And on that, down towards the bottom, I say my healthiest patients are vegan, vegetarian. There's no doubt about it, and I said it before, you're ahead of the curve. Most people are not going to change 100%, and maybe you have a devoted audience, but I hope there are also people listening to you because of what you do say, the kind of information you put out, who are not exactly where you are, but have the opportunity to change and improve. And so what I did is I took, and remember, I said I have no objection, and it is true. It's not that I recommend it. I'm in total agreement with what you say for peak health, optimal energy, whatever term fits, doing and feeling the very best.
Okay. I appreciate that. By the way, you were a little off on one percentage. You said a small percentage. Indeed, about 95% of my audience does not follow the strict standards.
You're like me.
5% do 95%. 95% would go out and eat the cow before it was killed. So you could watch a cow walking across the pasture with someone dragging behind, sucking on its tail. In any case, last question for you. When we look at the type of nutrients we should be having, what are the nutrients that you emphasize beyond the diet that you believe are most important to help prevent illnesses, or if a person should be sick, could help their immune response?
Well, I would pick just a couple. I'm not paid in any fashion by the Mega Food Vitamin Company, and I think their products are very good. But I have a rule about all vitamins and supplements. It's called WWO, Wednesday and the weekend off. I am not certain that any supplement is completely safe. There are not enough studies to show that. But on the other hand, there's enough convincing evidence to make me recommend them. So I would recommend a mega food antioxidant 4 or 5 days a week. And I reckon for a single choice, I'd recommend magnesium. Now, the antioxidant contains the C, the E, the beta carotene, the lutein, the astaxanthin. And where does chiolic garlic, and where, I hope you cook with garlic, but I certainly think that there are plenty of studies out there that support the beneficial use of various nutrients. But again, too much of alternative medicine is based on nutrients. It's the solution to virtually every problem, which I don't believe. And in addition, the amounts recommended tend to be high. So that's why I like my acronym, WWO, Wednesday and the weekend off.
Got it. I certainly agree with you that the answer is not just in supplements. I find that if we took all the supplements, ate the perfect diet, juiced every day, exercise, we're only 50% there. The rest is our spiritual, emotional connections, the importance of family, the importance of friends as well. Thank you very much for coming on, Dr. Robert Silverstein. And the people who want to go to his website, it's thepmc.org. And the book is Maximizing Healing, Optimizing Your Natural Ability to Heal. All the best to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We're out of time. I want to mention coming up in 2 hours, I'm finally going to address, I had just had enough of reading these nonsensical prophecies and doomsdayers and apocalyptic thinkers. Let's really look honestly at what the likelihood of any Mayan calendar or projection is by someone who actually is an expert, who's lived there, who's a professor in the field, considered the best in America. All right? Professor Robert Sittler, in 2 hours, putting the 2012 issue in a proper historical perspective. And then tomorrow, you won't want to miss our 3 o'clock show, the whole program devoted to a different perspective on what's happening in the Middle East. Plus, I'm also going to go to the Far East. I'll show you at least 22 nations in the world that I believe will be engaged in social upheaval. The question is, could it come to America? And also, who's behind the price gouging? There's been no change in supply and demand of gasoline. So why suddenly overnight did the price of oil go up astronomically? Gouging. We'll deal with that as well. Have a nice day.
The show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.